Okay, today is November 14th, 2012. This is the third interview with Ken Shapiro. Again, we are here in the UW-Madison Archives Conference Room, and my name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Archives, their oral history program. Ken, thanks again for coming here today. As with our other two interviews, if you could start by saying your name and spelling your last name so we can get the sound quality correct.
Okay, my name is Kenneth Shapiro. And it's spelled S-H-A-P-I-R-O.
Great, thank you. So before we turned on the recorder, you said there were some things from the last session that you'd like to talk a bit more about, so I'll let you have the floor for that.
Okay, I just wanted to fill in the last blank about my moving from Michigan to Wisconsin, and that is the situation at Michigan, the pluses and minuses. The plus was that Michigan made a retention offer to match the salary that Wisconsin was offering, and also to offer me the permanent directorship of the Center for Research on Economic Development. The negative was that the people who made my time at Michigan so interesting had mostly gone. That was the four young people I had mentioned last time, as well as the senior economics professor, Elliot Berg, who essentially was my mentor there. So they had all gone by the time we thought about moving. So that's all I wanted to add about the move from Michigan to Wisconsin.
Okay, great, thanks for that. So my first question was something you started talking about last time, and because of the post-election lack of sleep, I decided to wrap the session up a little early, and you talked about sort of your fast start once you got here at UW-Madison. Okay. I think it was specifically dealing with bringing in some grants, so if you want to start with that.
Well, let me backtrack a bit.
Sure, please.
Okay. When I arrived as Associate Dean for International Agricultural Programs, the office that I was directing had been engaged in a number of large programs prior to my coming. And let me just tick off what those were. These were what were called institutional development or institutional strengthening grants. And they were sponsored by the U.S. Agency for International Development. They started in the 1960s, and some of the major land-grant universities in this country were asked to take a leading role in them. So Wisconsin was asked to take a lead for developing colleges of agriculture or graduate programs in agriculture, depending on the location, in Nigeria, Brazil, and Indonesia. So in Nigeria, there were two programs. One was in the western state of Nigeria from 1966 to 71, and a larger one was at the University of Ife in Nigeria from 1964 to 1975. In Brazil, it was at the University of Rio Grande do Sul from 1964 to 1978. So you can see the length of these programs, that they were major undertakings. In Indonesia, there was a program at the Institut Pertanian Bogor, just about an hour outside of the capital city, and two other grants. I'm not sure about the timing on them, but they started in the 60s, and that was the one connection that was still ongoing when I arrived. The last years of the Indonesia program, and I was able to go out and visit that and help wrap that up. I should say that the key player in that set of programs that whom I knew was John Murdoch, M-U-R-D-O-C-K. John was the leading figure in the program in Brazil and Indonesia. There was a man whom I never met, Ed Heiser, who had been leading the office during some of those programs, so his name was important in the group. And then John also had been director of the Office of International Programs. When I came, he was located in Indonesia. And Wayne Kusow, K-U-S-O-W, from the Soil Science Department, was the director of International Programs, and Wayne had decided he didn't want to continue that, and that's how come the position came open. Okay, so that gets us up to the time when I arrived. And I think, as I mentioned last time, that the office had what was then called an institutional strengthening grant from USAID. That was not the international ones, but the ones I need to help Nigeria, Brazil, et cetera. But these were grants that AID gave to U.S. universities for internal strengthening of their international capabilities. And just about all the major land-grant universities in the country had these. When I came, that was in the last 2 years of that grant. And then there were follow-on grants for some universities that had to compete for those. And we competed for a follow-on grant and were successful. And in that follow-on grant, the universities who competed for it were asked to link up with historically black colleges and universities in the U.S., and we linked up with Virginia State University. And that was a nice relationship, lasted for about a dozen years. Okay. So that was sort of underpinning financing that gave us the wherewithal to go out and do other good things. I should say, also ongoing when I arrived was the International Extension Summer Program. The Department of Agriculture sponsored a program here at Wisconsin that brought in extension workers and leaders from around the country to spend most of the summer here, a part of it on campus and part placed out in the counties with extension agents to learn how we did it. And that was ongoing from about 1980 until probably about 92 or 93. And Jim Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, was the leader when I arrived, and then he was followed by Laverne Forrest. And Laverne runs the apple orchard out in Fitchburg. Hmm. The apple garden that he calls it. Mm-hmm. He retired there. And if you have kids, you can go pick pumpkins and apples out there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was a nice program, bringing in people from around the world for the summer. When I came, I brought with me one of my grants from the University of Michigan, and that was the grain marketing research program focused in Burkina Faso. And I had with me some graduate students from Michigan, and then I added some graduate students here at Wisconsin. And that ran from about the mid-80s until the early 90s. And that was the last major research undertaking that I took a leadership role in here at Wisconsin. I had a few new graduate students, as I say, here, but it soon became obvious that that was not good for either the graduate students nor me. So by the early 90s, I had stopped taking on graduate students. Then in terms of building the program, as I had been asked to take a leadership in extramural grants and especially in Africa, so the first large one was a grant in the Gambia, working with the Ministry of Agriculture. And this, in a sense, was a follow-on to what I had done at Michigan. At Michigan, while I was interim director of the Center for Research and Economic Development, I put together a large grant that reached across the campus to look at the what would happen if they were building dams on the Gambia River. This was a proposal. So what would they wanted to build it for hydropower and for irrigation. So there was competition to do research on the implications of building those dams, implications for the environment, implications for agriculture. And I was able to reach across the campus to put together quite a large program that was successful. And the grant came in a few months before I left the university. And we had to find others to take the leadership of that. And I mentioned the name of Elon Gilbert. Elon came and helped take the leadership in that program, because then he comes back again. So a few years after I had arrived at Wisconsin, there was again the opportunity. The AID put out a call for proposals for a university to link up with the Ministry of Agriculture in the Gambia. Gambia is a small West African country surrounded on three sides by Senegal. And so I put together that proposal and reached out and asked Elon if he would like to work with us. So we did a subcontract to the University of Michigan. Was successful in that grant. I think it totaled somewhere between $5 and $7 million and lasted from about 1985, 86 into the early 90s, about six 7-year program, and that had a number of UW faculty in place in the Gambia, and then quite a number of Gambian researchers coming here for advanced degrees. Most they all had undergraduate degrees, and we had them coming for advanced degrees here and to other universities as well, depending on what their needs were. And one of our partners in that was Virginia State University, our partner under that AID strengthening grant. And this was really quite a large program. At one point, we were building office buildings and actually had to go downtown to the state to get approval from the state building authority to, you know, just like you build a new building on campus. So we were building an office block out there. And my associate director, Jane Knowles, went out to the state to present the case, and it was approved. We had about five large houses for our staff, UW staff out there, a large number of vehicles that our staff and the Gambian Ministry of Agriculture used. So it was quite a logistical undertaking, as well as calling on the research skills of our faculty. So let me talk a bit about the people who were involved in that. The two of the faculty here who I want to mention in particular, one is Josh Posner, P-O-S-N-E-R. Josh passed away this past year from cancer, and he was in the agronomy department. And the other was Jess Reed in the animal science department. And each of them worked with their counterparts to upgrade their research skills and actually to undertake research programs that were directly beneficial to the Gambia. When Josh finished his tour, Earl Gritton, G-R-I-T-T-O-N, he came on board. And also, I think following Earl, or maybe at the same time, was Emmett Schulte, S-H-U-L-T-E, from the Soil Science Department. Earl Gritton was also in agronomy. We had others whose names escape me. One was, John Peters from the Soils Department helped develop a soil testing lab in the Gambia. Jerry Campbell came out on a short term and had some of his students out there looking at marketing programs. John Rowe, R-O-W-E, went out to take the leadership of the program. Elon Gilbert was the project leader for the first 2 years, and then John took over the leadership. And the other component is the staff that I inherited in the Office of International Ag Program. So I already mentioned Jane Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Jane was the associate director and the first person I met from Wisconsin. And she essentially was in charge of the day-to-day personnel management and had oversight of that for the office. And in the office, key players were Lynn Nelson, who was responsible for getting our faculty out there, making sure that they were well supported, taking care of any back and forth between them and the university. Sharon Baumgartner, B-A-U-M-G-A-R-T-N-E-R, who was primarily responsible for the Gambian students who came here. Loretta Erdahl, E-R-D-A-H-L, who was responsible for all the financial matters with the whole office, and including the Gambia project, a big project, you know, millions of dollars, and Loretta handled that quite well. And Nancy Fox, who was the department secretary. And an interesting story unfolded as we were setting up the program. I thought it was important that these staff members visit the Gambia and get to know some of the Gambians who were going to be engaged in our project, and also those who are in the Ministry of Agriculture with whom they would have to work. And I wanted them to get an appreciation for the environment, the context in which our project was going forward, you know, very different from sitting here in comfortable Madison. And so I arranged for the grant to pay to bring them out to the Gambia. And I can't remember who was the first one to go out, but when we sent in the authorization request, it bounced back. and bounced back to me saying, "There must be some mistake. Why are you sending your staff out to the Gambia?" And after being a little angry at someone questioning that, I found it sort of indicative of the way this feudal hierarchy here at the university works, that people would automatically question why we were sending staff, mere staff, as it were, out to such a program. But that turned out to be a terrific investment. It engaged the staff heavily in the project, and it engaged the project people out there with our staff. And there's often a we-they dynamic that builds up in these kinds of projects. You know, why are those people back in Madison? Don't they understand what our problems are? And the people in Madison saying, "What's wrong with them? Why don't they follow the rules that we have here?" And the rules that we have here often don't fit. So throughout the time that I was directing that office, we were, shall we say, educating the business side of the college and the university as to the realities of working in developing countries. And it took some effort, but we would often eventually find people who understood the difference and were quite helpful.
Can I ask a couple of questions
Sure.
about that project? excuse me. So you just talked about the importance of staff visiting Gambia. So how often or how many times did you visit?
I would go two or three times a year. And the key time I would go is when we would be developing the annual work plan. And that would be about a three-week visit. And then I would make one or two other short visits.
When you were developing that plan, who were the people who were involved in that?
So that was the tripart thing. It was the University of Wisconsin, it was the Gambian Ministry of Agriculture, and it was the U.S. Agency for International Development.
Okay.
And as these things evolve, it's not unusual that the players change. So for Wisconsin and the Gambia, the same players. I should say that the key man in the Gambia was Sampo Cisse, C-E-E-S-A-Y. And Sampo was with us the entire time. But for AID, the AID leadership in the Gambia changed. And this had some interesting impacts on us. The project started out to build the capability of the Gambian Ministry of Agriculture to do agriculture research. And after two or three years, the AID director in country, that's how AID is structured, there's a director for each of their country programs, and the chief agricultural officer in the aid office both had finished their tours, and they were replaced by leadership that was not so interested in long-term institutional development, but wanted to see, as they said, dollars in the farmers' pockets right away. And so this was a tension that we and they had to live with for the remainder of the project. And sometimes it was quite tense, but we all managed and and got through it.
Let's see what else. So when you were here, mm-hmm. what sort of work would you do as part of this larger project?
In part, it was sort of backup for the staff, make sure that they had what they needed for their research programs. In part, it was working with the faculty here to identify people to go out on short-term programs where there was a need for, as I say, Jerry Campbell is the one example that comes to mind, to look at marketing issues. So identifying faculty and students for short-term endeavors over in the Gambia. And a fair bit of it was administrative. As I say, it was often difficult to get the business side of the university to understand what we needed. And unfortunately, sometimes the staff certainly knew what needed to be done, but sometimes the university wanted to hear from a faculty member or an associate dean to make the case. So, I should, again, backtrack a bit. One of the other things I inherited was the Peace Corps office. So the campus Peace Corps office was located in our little complex of offices on the second floor of Ag Hall. And a few years after arriving, we got statistics from the Peace Corps showing that Wisconsin, in fact, was number one in recruiting volunteers. And we maintained that leadership up until, well, must have been after 2000, and then we dropped to second or third. And throughout all that time, the Peace Corps office was in our complex. The director of the Peace Corps came on one of the anniversaries of the Peace Corps and held a nice celebration and gave us a plaque in recognition, such like that. And Wisconsin still maintains a strong lead, if not number one, number two or three in Peace Corps recruiting.
Did you, so you inherited that, were there, I mean, obviously there must have been sort of structures in place and protocols in place that sort of
helped
you. Yeah,
so our job was to first recruit the recruiter. And these would be young people who had finished their Peace Corps tour and then had come to the University of Wisconsin for advanced degrees. And so typically they would stay with us for about 2 years. And then we would put out a call and hold a competition and interview folks and then bring them on board. So our staff had the sort of historical knowledge of how all this worked and how to link up with the Peace Corps and arrange for students to be interviewed and send materials to the Peace Corps. And so we would train the recruiter every 2 years and then they would take it off and run with it.
And these, the Peace Corps staff, was that different staff than?
Yeah, so this was essentially a contract that we had with the Peace Corps to hire and support the campus Peace Corps recruiter. It was just one individual. Okay. And also the contract extended to a small bit of salary supplement for my office to provide that, that support.
So was it people like the staff that you mentioned earlier that were supporting?
That same staff. So, and that's an interesting point, that staff were split across a number of projects. So there was the underpinning AID institutional strengthening grant that we received. There was the international extension program. There was a wrapping up of the Indonesia program. There was the Burkina Faso grain marketing project that I brought with me, and there was the Gambia project, and there was the Peace Corps. So all those programs each provided a bit of money to support the staff. So the staff that we had was largely supported by soft money, by these extramural grants. And that staff over time increased to, let's see, I guess another three, maybe four, we'll talk about as we expanded. We expanded quickly to add another person to help Loretta Erdahl on the financial side, and that was Betty O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. And she worked for us part-time, but for a long period of time. And also Sharon Kemp, K-E-M-P, who helped Sharon Baumgartner with incoming students. I should also mention in the Gambia, John Rao, R-O-W-E, went out for a 2-year tour and then he extended on other programs. And John out there was responsible for the financial administrative matters of the project. Also Mike McLean from UW Extension went out at a different time for similar responsibilities.
So early on, you know, you get this Gambia grant, you still have you bring a grant from Burkina Faso. How often are you, out of the country doing work?
I remember my wife and I were at some event and someone asked that question and I said, oh, not very often. And she came home and went to the calendar, counted up and she said, not very often, only about a third of the time. So, and that was not just out of the country, but also out of town in Washington. So I should say that out of the country was also, had continued for a while the consulting that I had been doing at at Michigan. So there were short programs.
And you had young kids, right?
Yeah, so our kids were in, I guess they were 6 and 8 when we came.
Did they get opportunities, or did your wife get opportunities to go?
They could have, but my wife didn't want to do that.
Okay.
She felt that it might be somewhat voyeuristic.
Okay.
For them going out just to see.
Okay.
You know, the other side is that it would have been a good experience for the kids. I mean, my wife had been with me in Tanzania for that year and a half, so she had an understanding of the situation. Let me say something about Washington.
Sure.
And the connections with AID and USDA, but mostly with AID. And there was an organization called OSUDIAP, A-U-S-U-D-I-A-P, Association of U.S. University Directors of International Agricultural Programs. And since I was one of those directors, I became a member. And then the leadership of that program linked in with the what was then called NASULGIC, the National Association of State Universities and Land-Grant Colleges, and it's now changed its name to APLU, Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. But that's the main sort of lobbying arm for U.S. state universities and land-grant universities. And together, OSUDIAP and NASULGIC would try to convince AID that they needed to allocate more money to more foreign aid money to universities that could help doing the kinds of things I just described for the Gambia or for earlier projects in Nigeria, et cetera. And I was of special interest to that leadership because at that time, Senator Kasten was on the Senate Appropriations Committee and Congressman Obi was on the House Appropriations Committee. So both of them had a say, and we were able to get audiences with them because of the Wisconsin connection. And eventually, I became president of that OSUDIAP organization, which changed its name to Association for International Agriculture and Rural Development during my reign, as it were. And of course, we wanted to reach out beyond U.S. universities. I think that was in 1992. And there was also a budget committee shared between AID and U.S. universities, and I became a member and then the chairman of that committee to get into the nuts and bolts of the AID budget and how that might affect universities.
Okay.
So this led to a lot of back and forth to Washington, and as well, you needed to be in Washington talking to AID, talking to the World Bank, talking to so-called Beltway Bandits, the consulting firms that are around Washington, to know what kinds of opportunities were in the air that you might be interested in. So to follow on with AID, and one of the focuses that we had of our budget work was the so-called Collaborative Research Support Programs, CRSP, or CRISPs. And these were intended for U.S. land-grant universities to link up with foreign institutions on specific research topics. And there are something like 10 or 11 of these. And when I came, Wisconsin was a participant in the bean cowpea CRISP. So we had a researcher, Fred Bliss, working on improving the genetics of beans in, I think he was focused on Brazil. There was one other faculty member in plant pathology doing the same work, similar work on the same project. Fred left and went to UC Davis, and this other faculty member, I guess he retired, and Doug Maxwell picked it up. And so Doug continued, and even as an emeritus now, Doug continues to do work on beans, and he moved on to other plants as well. So these were nice relationships. They provided funding for the U.S. scientists. They provided funding for, the partner from Brazil to send students here, and they provided funding in the country for long-term research programs. So one of the things that I worked on as chairman of that budget committee was the creation of a new CRISP, Collaborative Research Support Program, on sustainable agriculture and natural resource management. And we were able to get our friends in Congress to convince our friends at AID that this would be a good investment as environment and sustainability were becoming more and more important. And this was in the early 90s, I guess. And that led to, so we became a part of that CRISP. I was the chairman of the board of directors when it started. The management was actually at University of Georgia, but we had major roles in research. And Ian Coxhead, C-O-X-H-E-A-D, here in our Ag Econ department, became director of the Southeast Asian sub-program under that CRISP. And there were other faculty as well who got engaged. Continuing on with the CRISPs, there was a livestock CRISP. And during my time, we bid for and got the contract to take on a number of the major research subcomponents of that. And there's where I did get back into research a bit, looking at what was happening in the former Soviet Union. So this is skipping ahead to the 90s now. Mm-hmm. I'll go back to the 80s a bit. And there, I reached over to anthropology to Anatoly Kazanov, K-H-A-N-A-Z-O-V, Kazanov, I think I just got it right, and Bill Thiesenhusen, T-H-I-E-S-E-N-H-U-S-E-N, who was head of the Land Tenure Center at the time. And I convinced the two of them that their skills would help us get this this part of the livestock CRISP research program. The CRISPs would have a broad agenda, and then they would put out a call for faculty across the country to take on parts of the research. And Bill and Anatoly agreed, and then they stepped back and said, yes, Ken, but you need to be the PI for that. So I wound up, and that led me to get to know Anatoly quite well. Bill sort of backed away from it. He was too busy. And Anatoly and I did a lot of work in the former Soviet Union, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan primarily, Tajikistan and Turkmenistan just a little bit. Most of the time we spent in Kazakhstan. So it was quite interesting to get to know that part of the world and essentially to document what was happening as the Soviet had left and how the Soviet structures were being dismantled and the great poverty that ensued until most recently when Kazakhstan's oil wealth came on stream. Mm-hmm. So we had a number of Russian and Kazakh collaborators who were doing a lot of survey work for that program, and a couple of UW graduate students that Anatoly took responsibility for. Other CRISPs, and then there was the BASIS CRISP. And I can't recall what the acronym is, but it's what it stands for. But this was the CRISP that the Land Tenure Center bid for to become the management unit of. And it was essentially to look at assets and largely land assets of the poor and how these could be leveraged for development. And we'll talk more about the Land Tenure Center in a bit, but this sustained the Land Tenure Center in its last years. And then when the Land Tenure Center's personnel did no longer want to take the leadership, I was able to invite Michael Carter from the Agricultural Economics Department to take leadership. And that is just now wrapping up here. Michael has since left to go to UC Davis, and he'll take that with him next year, I believe. Okay, back to the 80s.
So those are the primary CRISP, C-R-S-P.
That we were engaged in. There was the bean cowpea, there was the livestock, sustainable agriculture, and BASIS. Yeah, and then other CRISPs were, there was a sorghum and millet CRISP that we were not a part of. There was a fish pond CRISP. I can't remember all of them.
Okay.
But they, They were largely commodity-based, except for sustainable agriculture and this basis crisp.
Okay.
So, and the different commodities were relevant to different parts of the country.
Okay.
You know, so we don't do much fish pond, but they do a lot of it in Auburn, for example. So they had the leadership down there in the
All
south.
Right. Okay, so back to the 80s.
Yeah. So then we joined up with two consulting firms as major subcontractors. So we had a long-term involvement in Tunisia, again, focused on developing the research capabilities in that country, and in Zambia, developing their economic planning capabilities. And in Tunisia, the key person here was Michael Roth, a staff member from the Lantenya Center. And in Zambia, the key person was Florence Chenoweth, C-H-E-N-O-W-E-T-H. And I should spend a minute talking about Florence. Florence was a student here, did a master's. She is a Liberian born. She went to, got her undergraduate degree in Liberia, and then came here and did a master's degree, and then went back to Liberia and joined the Ministry of Agriculture and became Secretary of Agriculture. There, they call Minister of Agriculture, and was the first woman Minister of Agriculture on the continent. And she was there when the government was overthrown. I think this was when John Doe took over and essentially tried to wipe out all the former administration leadership. And Florence barely escaped with her life, and taking children with her, essentially walked across the country and escaped. And she came back to Wisconsin. I don't know exactly how she managed to get back here, and enrolled for a PhD and did her PhD in the Development Studies program, focusing on land use programs, advised by Don Cannell, K-A-N-E-L, in the Ag and Applied Economics Department here. And then she took positions with the United Nations, I believe. I don't want to mix up her vita. But we brought her back when we had this Zambia project. And so she came and worked for us as the actually the leader of that whole project in Zambia, working in the Ministry of Planning, helping them. Then she finished that and came back and worked in our office. Then she joined the UN Food and Agriculture Organization and first went to the Gambia by coincidence and then went to South Africa, where she took the lead in helping that country when they were having a series of floods, and then came back to the United Nations, where she was sort of like the number two person in the FAO, and then came back to Wisconsin when the university started its human rights program, and she was the head of that program for a few years. And in the course of that, we nominated Florence for a Distinguished Alumni Award, which she received, and then for an honorary doctorate, which she received, and that was very nice. So then she was here as head of our human rights program until the new president of the country, Helen Johnson Sirleaf, who had been a close friend of Florence's, won the election and was seeking experienced leadership and asked Florence to come back as Minister of Agriculture. And so she did, and that's where she is now, as Minister of Agriculture. Okay. So that was a program in Tunisia and in Zambia. In I guess it would have been 86, 87, the Rockefeller Foundation put out a call for proposals to start a program to improve the PhD training that Africans were receiving in this country in the agricultural sciences, biological and physical and social sciences related to agriculture. And that was a limited call. I think it was about 12 different universities that were heavily engaged in Africa. And by that time, with our program, Burkina Faso, the Gambia, Tunisia, Zambia, we were in that group. And so we competed for that and won that competition. And that we created what we called the Summer Institute for African Agriculture Research. And Rockefeller funded that to the tune of about 100,000 or more per year for about for about a dozen years, until they decided they wanted to shift their funding more into the continent. And what that did was allow us to bring bright African graduate students. They would have to apply and compete to get one of the about 20 slots that we had. Excuse me. And these were students who were into their programs and were starting on their dissertations, and they came with essentially very brief descriptions of what they wanted to do for their dissertations. And we held a series of workshops with them, much of it as a group about dissertation research, major topics, and then one-on-one sessions with them about their own particular research. And what the Rockefeller money allowed us to do was not only buy the time of our faculty here to work with them, but also to bring in leaders from around the world. So we brought in folks from Africa, Africans themselves, as well as people from England and from the US. So I guess two of the highest profile folks we brought in were Norman Borlaug, B-O-R-L-A-U-G, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for the work he had done on breeding of wheat that led to the Green Revolution in the 60s. And Gabisa Ejeta, E-J-E-T-A, an agronomist from Purdue, who won the World Food Prize for work he had done on breeding of sorghum. And this was really very enriching for our campus to have these folks and develop these relationships with them. We would bring them back numerous times. Norman Borlaug only once, but the others would come back and became sort of our regular team. So that was, and then years after, I would be in Africa, one place or another, and someone would say, you know, I was in the Summer Institute at such and such a time. And part of it was, I think, emotional support, because a lot of these students were at universities that did not have the kind of strong international programming and Africa programming that Wisconsin had, but they had, for one reason or another, been to some university where they didn't get that kind of support. And I recall a number of sessions in which students would break down and cry as they would be talking about the kind of support that they were not getting in their home institution. So this was a good relationship for us with those students, with the guests, guest speakers, and with the Rockefeller Foundation. So where are we?
We're at about 43 minutes, I think. And where, so we should say that you're looking at, you have a really nicely laid out chart here. Yeah. Does that put us out of the 80s and into the?
Yeah, it gets us just about into the 90s.
Okay. So let me maybe ask a couple questions and see where that goes, and that may be. So you came here, you came here in 84?
83.
Mm-hmm. All right. So roughly we're talking about a period of 7 to maybe 10 years, although some of the stuff you've talked about actually
jumps ahead a little
bit. Jumps ahead. Mm-hmm. What sort of, in this first, we'll say, decade or so, what sort of teaching, if any, are you doing?
Okay, so when I came, the department asked me to teach a course for students starting their dissertation. They didn't need someone to teach agricultural development, which I had been teaching at Michigan, because they had Bill Thiessenhusen, they had John Strasma, they had Don Cannell, they had Peter Dorner to do that. And so for just a couple of years, I started doing that, and we realized that most of the students signing up were from the economics department. And this might not have been the wisest use of an ag econ faculty member. So there was not the demand for that, and I was just as happy not to do that. So I stopped the teaching. And my relationship with the department, you know, I had an office there to start with, nice office on the fourth floor, which is where most of the activity of the department takes place. And the department at that time had a very nice institution of daily lunches, so that probably a dozen of the faculty would get together and eat lunch together. And that was the, one of the main ways that I kept connected with the department. And also, I was asked to serve on various committees, the key one being the personnel committee, which did the recruiting of new faculty. So I kept my links there, as well as when I would be getting folks to participate in some of our international programs.
Okay.
It wasn't until
go ahead.
Probably the mid-90s, I think it was, when I was asked to pick up a course that had been shared by a number of departments on world food and well, no, it was called World Hunger and Malnutrition.
Okay.
And that was shared by Nutritional Sciences, Agronomy, and Ag Econ. And the person who had been teaching it just before me was Joanne Chetta, C-S-E-T-E, wonderful assistant professor in nutrition who left to join the United Nations. And so then the course was vacant, and the department asked if I'd like to pick it up, which I did, and I taught that from, I can't recall when it was, but probably for 15 years or so until I retired just last year.
Okay.
And we can talk more about
that. Yeah, so we'll talk more about that next time for sure, since it becomes part of sort of the last half of your time here.
Yeah. The and maybe I can talk more about the department. The department had a very strong development focus. I mentioned those folks, and then when I was head of the personnel committee, we recruited Michael Carter, and then subsequently Ian Coxhead came on with his South Asian. So everyone up until that point was focused on Latin America, as was Michael Carter. Ian came on. That was through a campus connection. The campus had gotten a grant to expand their capabilities in Southeast Asia, and I was asked if I would encourage the department to join in the search for that. There were several departments across campus that did that, and so the department did, and Ian was the one who was selected, and Ian is now, in fact, the chairman of the department. So, and then they also were strong in resource economics. Dan Bromley, Rich Bishop, Bill Preventure were the leaders in that field. So those were two of the big strengths of the department. Then the third major area was what I would call domestic U.S. agriculture. And that was heavily invested in by UW Extension. So a lot of the faculty who were focused on the U.S. were also doing extension work. And there was a tension between that group, the heavily extension domestic group, and the resource and development group. And sometimes that tension was not very pleasant. That had started, focus on the department again, that had started to heal when Brad Barham was chair, just before I became chair, and I was able to continue that healing. And also some of the key combatants had retired. So the department, I think, is now a lot wholer, mm-hmm. Focusing on their common needs rather than on that internecine war that went on for too long.
Mm-hmm. Do you think having a, I guess I'll use the word strong, chair can help to maybe quash or
well, during, well, to name names, two of the key figures on either side of that tension, shall we call it, were Ed Jesse on the domestic and extension side, and Dan Bromley, resource economics. and each of them was chair. And during their times as chair, the other side felt that they were not getting the representation that they should. Dan was chair twice. And then after Dan's second time, Brad became chair, and Brad is heavily international, but was able to smooth the waters. And then I became chair, and we can go into that whole transition, but part of my decision to become chair was, you know, after it was proposed to me, I said this was came out of left field, but what I did was I called both Dan Bromley and Ed Jesse and asked them what they thought of my being chair. And both of them said, this is a great idea. So I figured if I had those two guys, this would work well. And so then, they say that the department now does not have that kind of a, you know, there's still echoes, but by and large, the department functions quite well, and everyone seems to be working towards common objectives.
Okay. So to back up, because it sounds like, I'm guessing you were chair later on.
Yeah, that was just the last 3 years.
Oh, okay. So, right. So to back up, and again, maybe one or two more things about this, you know, mid-80s to mid-90s, mid to late 90s, and that's the, were you involved in campus service? And if you were, what sort of things did you do?
I'm trying to see just when these things happened. It was not very much, I should say, in the late 80s to mid 90s. I got heavily involved in the 90s in a very large domestic project funded by the Kellogg Foundation, and then in the Asian Partnership Initiative in the mid 90s, and then in the initiative in the 2000s. But I should back up if you're interested in the sort of college history. The mid-90s was the time when Roger Wise came on to be dean of the college. And as you may know, Roger had to leave that position when it became known that he was having an affair with his secretary. And John Wiley was John was provost at the time, and his point was that he didn't want to get engaged. He didn't have anything to say about romantic involvements, but supervisor-subordinate relationship was clearly improper. And so Roger left sort of suddenly. When Roger came, he was enthusiastic about strategic planning, and he put the college into a planning mode for over a year, and it seems like that's all we did, we being the associate deans and much of the faculty. And he was trying to determine where were the comparative strengths of the college. As always, budgets were tight. You know, where should we be investing? Where should we be disinvesting? And so there was an enormous exercise in gathering data, also large exercise in having people write white papers about different issues. I wrote about the international aspects of the college. Constituents across the state were brought in for discussions. And so far as I can tell, there were no significant changes that came out of that exercise, except that the faculty became very unhappy with even the words strategic planning. And to jump forward, when the current dean, Kate Vandenbosch, came for her interview, she interviewed with numbers of groups, and including the department chairs. And she started talking about, you know, if she were named the dean, she would want to start a strategic planning exercise. And there was this gasp heard in the room. And a few folks told her about the history of strategic planning and the negative feelings that the group, the college had. You know, maybe that's, you know, old news, since Roger was here in the mid-90s and now Kate's here in the mid-2012. But Kate stuck by her guns, and she's launched a strategic planning exercise in the college. So I'm wishing her good luck. But she was warned that at least some of the old-timers like me, and there are quite a number who are still on the faculty, mm-hmm. don't have good memories of that exercise.
Ken, do you have anything else you want to add about anything you've written down or notes about this time period? And if so, great. If not, we'll end here and start off in the mid to late 90s and progress forward from there.
I see. I think that does it. We should next time be sure to talk a bit about the Lantenia Center, which operated largely independently, but I sort of was in a helping role for them, and then they got in trouble, and finally the college decided that they didn't want to continue as the main sponsor.
Okay.
And of the Lantenia Center faculty and staff, I think the key person, if you can do an interview with David Stanfield, S-T-A-N-F-I-E-L-D. David's retired, but still in the area.
Okay.
He has a long history with the center, but he would be good to, because okay. that was an important part of this campus for quite a number of years.
Okay.
I don't have that much information about it, but some.
All right. Okay. Well, Ken, thank
then
you. Oh,
the
go
other
ahead,
thing
sorry.
We should pick up is study abroad, which started in the 90s.
All right, so LTC and study abroad for next time.
And then there's a number of projects that we can talk about as well.
Right, from your timeline there.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, Ken, I want to thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.